Welcome to episode 7 of season 19 of the Growing Empire Show. Today I'm interviewing a special guest, Aaron Ford. Aaron has spent the last 10 years in various roles trading his time for money before actively pursuing freedom through commercial multifamily real estate investing. Aaron's got extensive experience with acquisition and analysis of commercial multifamily assets. He's responsible for operational systems, strategy, and asset management of his current portfolio. With a strong background in finance and business management, Aaron's become a trusted expert in the field of real estate investing. Aaron is a dedicated family man and a Christian business owner driven to help others and maximize life for the loved ones and the people around him. Aaron owns a flipping company, concrete company, and a property management company. Aaron resides in Kansas City with his wife and kids. I'm really excited to talk to Aaron today about his experience in real estate investing, so make sure you stay tuned.
Welcome to Growing Empires, hosted by real estate entrepreneur and trusted investment advisor, Jennifer DeJesus. Growing Empires provides insight to building wealth through passive income-producing real estate investments for those who want to build and manage a more profitable real estate portfolio.
Well, welcome to the Growing Empires podcast, where it's our mission to help investors create wealth through real estate and secure financial freedom. Today, we have a special guest, Aaron Ford, and I also have my wonderful co-host and good friend, Robert Musso. So, Robert and Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Great to be here, as usual.
All right. Why don't we jump into Robert? Why don't you just give a brief background about yourself and your connection with our guest, Aaron?
Yes, real quick. My background, for all those who haven't heard me before, is 20 years in the luxury hotel and hospitality space. While I was in corporate America, I was always investing in real estate and had a deep, deep interest in exploring the world of entrepreneurism at one point. So about 12 years ago, I did leave corporate America. I'm a full-time real estate investor right now. I live in New Jersey with my wife and kids and invest in several different states, predominantly multifamily, student housing, and industrial flex space. And I like to live my life with the mantra of using real estate as the bridge to living your best life. And I happen to love family, cooking, food, travel, and investments. I know my guest, Aaron Ford, from a real estate community that we're a part of called MIH Mastermind. And there's so many like-minded individuals within this mastermind that follow the same exact philosophy of incorporating, family and food and faith and travel, and living a great life as a result of real estate. So really excited to have Aaron as a guest. And, I'm always excited to be a part of your podcast this year, Jennifer. So thank you again for having me.
Glad to have you. So welcome to the show, Aaron. Why don't you give us a little bit of background on yourself and your journey from, business to real estate investing?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to thank you guys, very much for having me on. It's wonderful to be a part of this. I know you've had some really heavy hitters on your podcast. And so I'm glad to be have the opportunity. So I am also a full-time real estate investor. I'm in the Kansas City area, married with a bunch of kids, and I got in this deal late 2017, early 2018, and it was really because of the kids, right? So this picture this. I'm working a regular job like most people do, I'm trading 40 hours a week for this paycheck and have all these young kids growing up and I get to do some things with them on the weekends but I'm missing life's moments for the most part. And it's always kind of like a nagging thing that it's like, hey man, if I could just start a business, I'd be free, right? If I could just own my own thing, I could be free and I could spend time with my kids. I was the kind of guy that we had a great relationship. My kids are all kind of the same age, so we have a great relationship. And when I would come home from work, kind of picture this, like I'm a construction worker. I get home, my hours were 7 a.m. to 3:30 in the afternoon. So that was the normal job portion of my life. So that getting off pretty early. My kids are home, they're young, and dad pulls in. They run out through the yard. I got my lunchbox. I'm dirty. Kneel down. You know, I give him a hug. Daddy's home. You know, let's go play catch or do whatever. And, you know, that was great. That was the highlight of my day and my life, right? What happened was I began to resent the job because I missed out on life's moments. And I'm like, if I could start a business, it'd be freedom. What really happened, guys, was I started this business because I finally mustered up the strength to start a construction company. And I went from 40 hours a week to 80. And I had all my chips pushed into this venture working. And it became such a I cannot fail type of thing that I actually traded more time for this venture, right? And it became more of a stuck. I just owned my own job. I didn't have a business. I didn't know how to create a business. I owned my own job. And then it went from 40 to 80. And that relationship that I had with them running to me fizzled out because I was stuck at work and making it happen. And I think that relates to a lot of people, just because that's how we have to do it, right? But the systems are the key. And so as I continued to just read books and look for ways out of this struggle. And I kept running across real estate. People that were successful had rentals. And I was like, oh, I read a book and it said, if you, for every unit that you have, you can make $200 a month in income and profit, not income, profit for every unit. And I'm like, whoa, that was it. That was the epiphany moment. If I could get 20 units, I could have $4,000 a month coming in profit. And then I leveraged another person's system, a property management company who already has it all figured out. I thought, right, we'll get into that. But I leveraged their system and I collect $4,000 a month. I can be quitting my job, spending all the time with my family. You know, life's great, right? So that was the plan. And, you know, as I rolled through this and started, well, the next question was, how am I going to do it? Single family? Multifamily, it just needed to get rentals. Well, literally, it was no deeper than this. It's going to take me forever with single family. I better learn multifamily. So I had no prior knowledge. I started picking up books. There's a book. The first book I read was Crushing It in Commercial Multifamily, Ryan somebody. Very good book, very well-rounded book. And the second book was Multifamily Millions by David Lindahl. And in that book, David Lindahl says a very simple technique that I still use today. And he goes through direct mail marketing, high level, sending letters to people. And I immediately started doing it. And I started listening to all the podcasts and reading additional material on how to underwrite deals. And my first one was a 16 unit. Like I said, at the end of 2017, beginning of 2018, sometime there at the change of the year. And, you know, really, it, you know, lots of stories along the way, but really, you know, that's what started it. And, you know, fast forward to today, you know, I've got several more units than that and doing fine and have learned a lot along the way.
So at some point you went from trading your time to you bought your freedom. And I assume that shift happened when you went from owning your business to pursuing multifamily or real estate investing full time. So what was that? When was that moment? When was that shift? What was the moment where you said, nope, this is now my full time. This is what I'm doing every day. Because I assumed you maybe hired people for your construction business or you sold it. You did one of the two, right? And then you decided I'm all in on real estate. What was that shift? What was happening during that moment?
Yeah. So really to get super granular, it was systems. So once the systems started to be implemented, then I could pull myself out of that role. And so like to get granular, I had to write down what I did in a day and audit my time and then look at that and say, okay, what can I transfer to someone else? And by doing that, it naturally leaves more time for me to do higher level activities. And I still do that basic principle today, every week. So I try to audit my time. I try to look and see where my lower level tasks are, transfer those, hire a new team member if it's needed, and then fill that extra time with higher level things. So the systems are the key, and the people, you know, everybody's question is, well, I don't have enough money to hire out that position, or no one can do it as good as me, or you can't find good help these days. Nobody wants to work. Like, we hear all that all the time. At least I do in the construction world. And it's all true. But Dan Martell says 80% done is 100% awesome. So if you change your expectations to, hey, I give this role away and it might get done 80% of what I could do, that's still 100% awesome because it frees your time and that's how you grow.
That's a great point. So, Robert, what do you think about all this so far?
You know, we all have similar stories. We got into this on the last podcast as well. You know, everybody has a different story on how they got to where they are today. You know, a lot of people come to me weekly, monthly, annually, and tell me, you know, and ask the same exact question that you ask. What was your turning point? When did you decide to leave? You know, I happened to leave a little bit later in my career because it was ingrained in my head from the time I went to high school. I went to an all boys high school. It was very, very academic and sports oriented. And I played sports in a high level of academics. And then it's like, you got to go to college and then you have to work in corporate America. And you follow this blueprint, which you think is right. But I'm a first generation American, and my parents, you know, and grandparents and their parents, you know, they didn't have much, and they came over to this country to explore the American dream. So it was in my DNA at one point to say, when am I taking this plunge out of corporate America to, you know, to have my financial freedom and my flexibility? And, you know, Aaron, you know, you make a couple of good points. You know, I'm very, very close to my kids as well. You know, I was told that we could not have children, and then we had children. So I'm an older father. I'm 50 years old, and I have a 5-year-old and a 14-year-old.
Awesome.
And this is the way God intended it for me. So I said to myself, when my son was 2 years old, I said, I missed the first 2 years of his life with all this traveling I'm doing all around the world. I have these real estate assets. They're producing some cash flow. They're producing nice equity. So let me take the plunge and leave corporate America. And I just jumped. I had a little bit of a safety net, but my wife was a school teacher with some income, and I decided to leave. So everybody's journey is different. I love hearing everyone's journey. There isn't one blueprint that you follow. It has to come from your heart and your soul and your personal and professional situation. It doesn't matter what age you are. Oh, you're 29, too late, or you're 42, it's too late. You know, it all comes down to you. So I love hearing these stories. And the question really is, are you happy? You know, what is your level of success? Your level of success isn't necessarily what other people have. We talk about this often, that there's a lot of people who measure the back of a baseball card and compare themselves to others a lot. But, you know, that's not how I do it. You know, what's successful for me and my family in the moment and for the future. So it's great. And I know that you're in the Kansas City market, which Jennifer and I happen to personally love just in general. I've spent a lot of time in Kansas City in my hotel career. So I've seen the growth. I was recently back in the market for the first time in 15 years when we visited. And that was just awesome to see the growth. So you happen to be located in a market that's doing well nationally. Have you always worked in the Kansas City market, Aaron, or have you done anything outside of your local area or even in a different state?
Yeah, a couple hours away. I've ventured. It's considered, I mean, it's close enough to drive to. So, but to me, these ancillary investments were just learning experiences. It might as well have been California, and it might as well have been Florida, because I just didn't go by. And there's a whole learning experience with that with just not being local and kind of how this is all developed. But I wanted to hit on something you just mentioned because it was gold. If you're stuck in this like dilemma, the most successful people, every one of them that I've talked to, they just took the jump. You said, take the jump. Like, you can't hardly teach it. You know, I mean, it's, you can learn and you can educate, and I've got people who are smarter than me and know more than me and won't do anything. Mm-hmm. It's just scary. I get it. But you know, stress is a funny thing. Challenge is a funny thing. We need to chase it in life. And when you put yourself in a position where you got to make it happen, it's actually, it's actually advantageous, I would argue, and it's actually productive. So I wanted to hit on that. It's just jump in. You know, I've made more mistakes by doing things than I could ever learn in a book or a conference or anything.
Amen. I love it. It's right. I think a lot of people are afraid of failure. And I speak to people to this day who just can't wrap their heads around, how is this project going wrong, or how is this failing right now? Well, the most successful people that I know, and I've been around a lot of them, when I was in the hotel industry, I dealt with CEOs, because I didn't deal with Mr. and Mrs. Ford going to Bermuda. I would deal with the CEO of Hewlett Packard or Bank of America, or, you know, Merrill Lynch, IBM at the time. You know, I dealt with a lot of CEOs. They all talk about failure, and they all talk about the leap of faith and the belief in themselves that they took to get to where they are today. And failure was essential for their success. And even with experience, you're still going to have adversity. You're still going to have roadblocks and obstacles and failure. And that's part of it. You have to welcome it. So that's the key. I think people are just afraid to take the leap of faith. They don't, maybe it's not about not believing in themselves, but they're just, there's something to it. So the chemical makeup of people like us who are entrepreneurs, it's something that's got to be really deep within you to believe in yourself and go for that jump. So I agree with you 1,000%. And I'm not looking back. I'll tell you that. Once you get to a certain point, you're not looking back, and you're just doing everything possible to stay that course. So
true. Yeah. I mean the failure. I like to be as honest as possible about my failures. You don't see a lot of podcasts about people failing. I mean, it's always about how cool am I? Look how cool I am. Look at all this I did. I'm so great. If you could be like me, you know, you'd be cool too. And that, look, here's the deal. I don't want to be on top of the mountain and have no one to spend time with and no friends. Everybody else is at work. Right? This group that we're in is so wonderful because, you know, we can get into the groups, but when you level up's a terrible term, but when you move up the ladder like this and your friends are all in successful situations, life is fuller. So if I can share my defeats and my problems or my failures, then maybe it encourages people. Oh, look, he made it. Maybe I can do it. Right. Like, instead of, oh, everything's been great. So try to remember that. But yeah, you're right. You know, it's going to happen. You got to embrace it and expect it. So if your expectations are, if I drive down the highway and I expect no one to cut me off for a month and I expect everyone to drive perfect, my expectations are set there. When someone runs me off the road or cuts me off a little bit, I got to slow down. Inherently, I'm like, hey, you freaking idiot. You know, I want to get upset. If I expect 5 people a day to cut me off in traffic and only one does, I'm happy. Expectations are the secret sauce for happiness, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well said. Well said.
I couldn't agree more. But with everything you guys are saying, it's because, you know, I think it all starts from a very young age, whether our parents taught us or not. Our educational system's warped, right? They teach you exactly what you shouldn't be doing in life, which is go get a great education, go to work up the ladder, and just trade your time for money, right? That's what you're doing. And you never have a good, fulfilling life. You maybe, you know, figure out what corporate downsizing looks like, you know, who knows? But the reality is you never have flexibility. You never have freedom. And, you know, what we have in common is that all 3 of us have decided that that wasn't going to be our life. And we were, you know, probably afraid at the moment, but we made the jump. We made the jump to make sure that we could still have the things that we valued. Now, that doesn't, as you said, Aaron, that doesn't come without challenges. That doesn't come without errors and mistakes and things that you have to pivot from, right? There's whether you're owning your own business, whether you are in real estate full time, there are challenges. It is hard work. So it's not that we are not working hard. None of us live this glamorous life where we're sitting in front of the couch, you know, sitting on the couch in front of the TV all the time, or traveling the world and not actually working. We're working, but we have the flexibility of time to decide what's important in each moment. And I think that's a critical component. So, you know, my workday may look very different than your workday or Robert's workday, but the thing that we have in common that I think is so powerful and what people just miss out on in life that I think is so sad is that I control when I'm working. I am at every kid's sporting event. I am making dinner every single night. I travel a lot with my kids and I still work my ass off in between all of that, right? But I choose when I'm doing it. And that's what is so powerful about having that flexibility and that time back. And, you know, it's really just a shame. I wish our educational system would teach our kids that. I know I'm trying to do it, you know, to my own kids, my teenagers that are thinking about what they're going to do in their next journey. But, you know, I don't want them to be subject to what the rest of the world is doing. I don't want them to go trade their time for money. I want them to love what they're doing. I want them to be passionate about it, but I want them to make sure that everything that they're doing has value to them and is important to them. So I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree with everything that you all have said more. So Aaron, you are, you know, fast forward, and I don't think you really touched, you know, as much as you're really doing right now, but you have businesses that you're still operating, again, via other people because you figured out how to maximize your time, but you're running a flipping business. You're heavily invested in multifamily. I mean, you are wearing an awful lot of hats, awful lot of hats. Some are long-term gains. Some are short-term gains, right? The flipping business is a short-term game, short-term cash flow game. But your multifamily and your businesses, I'm sure, were set up for, you know, long-term wealth building strategies. So how do you balance all of those things that you're doing in a day and how you're picking where you're spending your time about amongst those asset classes, but also amongst your business and how much time you're giving back?
Yeah. So balance, for me, starts on the calendar.
Okay.
And so I need to block out activities that produce high level results and then commit to those activities through the calendar that I use to keep myself straight. So actually, I do have more going on today than I ever have, but I also have more time freedom today than I ever have because I can utilize time in a different way, or more effective way. But it starts with the calendar. So every morning I do my little routine, but every morning starts with a quiet time where I can work on basically systems and processes. And yes, further on through the day and periodically through the week, I have basically blocks where I evaluate KPIs and look at different metrics for the businesses. But really the most important is that auditing of the time and the quiet period to figure out, okay, what low level tasks can be transferred and then how do you build the system to transfer those? And I do a lot of Loom videos. I'm sure you're familiar with. It's just to share your screen and kind of show how to do different tasks for your teammates. And those, the goal is to just audit and transfer via instructional playbook, if you will. If you've ever read Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell, this is nothing, you know, it's all Dan's. So, right. This is just what it is. I didn't come up with any of this. But that's the building the playbooks for the transfer is the only way that you can scale. The only way, because I was maxed out years ago with what I can produce. And so the system basically looks like a written out process for everything. It write out line by line, every single granular detail, and then an instructional video attached to it. That's the process. And then when a new hire is made, I'll share my we go through the written process, the video. I share my screen. They watch me do it. They share their screen. I watch them do it, and then they're done. Or one of my team members watches them do it, and then they watch their screen. And so processes and systems, I know they sound very lame. They suck. They're tough to put together. It's just what it is. But the freedom at the end, because remember, we've been hitting on this the whole time. The most valuable thing in the world is not money. It's time freedom, right? Time is the most valuable thing. Wealth is really just a measure of how much time you can sustain your quality of life without physically doing anything. So how wealthy are you is how much time you really have that you can, you won't lose your quality of life. And that's, in my experience, only created through systems of some sort of machine that can continue that without you.
Yeah, I agree with that. My experience and feedback with that is always that, you know, sometimes I say, oh, my biggest regret is I didn't leave corporate America a little bit earlier, but being in corporate America was, is essential, you know, for a lot of folks out there who, you know, who are thinking about becoming an entrepreneur, because you have systems and processes and people and technology and resources in place in corporate America, and you could take that into your entrepreneurial role at a later date. These are some of my flaws. When you're an entrepreneur, okay, you need other people to assist you with the process. And I was trying to do a lot on my own, and sometimes that doesn't work out. You need, you know, so I played sports my whole life, and I use a lot of sports analogies as well. You know, you can't have an all-star team in baseball with five, you know, all-star first basemen. Everybody has to play a certain role in a certain position. I'm not asking my pitcher to play left field, and I'm not asking the left fielder to pitch. So I've been learning even later in my career in life how essential it is to have the right people and the right roles in place, which is very, very important for exactly what you were saying, Aaron, the systems, the process, and the technology. So you're always learning something every day, no matter how many years you've been doing it. Always know that you don't know certain things, and be open-minded, and don't put your ego first. You know, just always be open to learning and educating yourself, no matter how long you've been doing something. And I learn from people who just started a year ago. Maybe they'll see something that no one else did. I pick up something from a technology perspective that they're doing. I started adapting to AI because of the younger folks that are coming into the game now. You know, there's a lot of things we can all learn from each other. So spot on, and I agree with you about all that.
Yeah, and that kind of reminds me of a point that I'd like to make about your network, right? So the group that you spend your most time with, we all know you're some of the five people you spend your most time with. That's true. Obviously, this is exactly along that line. But if you're in a group where you're not so much as looking at everybody's net worth, but of course, usually it plays out this way. The more successful people think this way. But if you're in a room where you're talking about ideas, opportunities, advancement, self, physical, financial, whatever, if that's the table that or the room you're sitting at frequently, then those peers will rub off on you for me in a positive way, right? And so you said, you know, sometimes people that just come in give me educational, you know, advice, or I can learn from them. And that's 100% true. It's not really where you are in life. It's how you think. It's how that group thinks. And so my closest group, I try to keep where we are talking about ideas, advancements, things that are working in their businesses, my business, and we just shoot the breeze regularly. And it's more productive in that room than anywhere else. I'll tell you a story. I was at I actually don't really do this fantasy football anymore. I've always been a big football fan. Obviously, we know the Chiefs. We struggled through years and years with the Chiefs. Nobody talks about that. Now they're like, oh, it must be nice. You got the Chiefs. Well, anyway, nobody remembers Elvis Gerback and all these people way back in the day, but that's kind of a side note. But the fantasy football thing, you know, I used to listen to all that and just try to be good at that. And I was at several years ago, I was at this fantasy football draft thing. And I was with a buddy of mine. We actually own a business together. He's very successful. We're one of those to get in the room and talk about ideas. I would consider him, you know, a one percenter of the type of people that he just his peer group that he grew up with, if that makes sense. Kind of the person who rose out of wherever you grew up. If you're like me, you can think back and say, okay, the place that I grew up and my friends at the time, you know, by rising up out of that, sometimes there's some animosity. Maybe it's just people think, maybe it's a reflection. How did he do that? And whatever it is, I know that's true. But I didn't know anybody in this room at this draft. Just met them all. And I'm watching him successful sit there in the middle and he's doing his draft and stuff. And I was just there. I don't even know how I got there. But I noticed there was little it was actually – anyway, you had to buy teams, and that's important because you could just bid up whatever you wanted. It was a different type of draft. But the people in the room were saying little things. They weren't mean at all, so don't take me wrong. But they're saying little things to him like, oh, must be nice. You'll probably just buy this team, or well, you should just buy this, or oh, yeah, you're like, see, you know, why did you stop bidding on that team? You ought to just buy it, like all this money you got, and just little shots across the room all over about how much money he has. And I just was another one of those moments. I'm like, I have that same group, unfortunately, that I grew up with potentially that are not, they're just not. Maybe genuinely, it's just, I'll say it like this. You grow into different tiers and you grow into different phases of life. And so I need to be able to adapt to that and realize that, hey, you know, maybe the ideas and stuff, that's where I'll spend most of my time now in those groups of people. But I could just relate so much because I had that same kind of, oh, you know, oh, well, what happened? You must be nice. You just like, it's just 100%. Almost, dragging you down. But when you realize it for what it is, it's nothing derogatory, but I could see it from third party view and that group. So now where we are today, like you mentioned before, MIH and other groups that we hang out with, everyone is genuinely happy for everyone. I firmly believe that. Yeah. There are very few, if any, haters at all about who's succeeding. We all just want to hang out and advance each other. So that mindset, that group, developing that and kind of evolving to that is crucial as well.
The episode will continue in just a moment.
As an investor, we know it's important to stay on top of market trends and real estate opportunities that add value to your portfolio. We also know that having a trusted source of reliable information to help you stay a step ahead of other investors is critical to your success. If you're interested in having these types of resources, as well as access to me and my team, I invite you to join the Empire Investment Club, a free service that gives you an easier way to make sense of today's and tomorrow's real estate opportunities. As a member of the Empire Investment Club, you'll get access to relevant resources and investment-focused experiences such as live interactive webinars, market trend presentations, and investor socials designed to equip you with what you need to succeed. So whether you're an active investor, passive investor, a combination of both, or just starting out, the club is where you'll get what you need to build a portfolio you love. To join, just head over to jenniferdejesus.com, sign up, and we'll see you in the club, where everyone's on a journey to becoming a better investor.
And Jennifer, this is a good point for us maybe to kind of interject into the MIH family, right?
Sure, yeah.
And maybe talk a little bit about the mastermind. And I have a conversation. I have a story about just a lunch I had yesterday with a gentleman who is basically asking me about my mastermind experience. And he's an investor who owns real estate, but he's also interested in investing in deals. So we were having a wonderful conversation, and I was very, very impressed with his very diverse background and very similar, you know, ideas that we all share. But he was like, oh, yeah, I see you're in this mastermind, but there's so many out there. They're a dime a dozen. He's like, you know, and I stopped him, and I said, no, I said, they're not. I said, believe me, you know, I'm going on my sixth year now knowing Marco and in this group, and I've been in some others. And just being in sales, marketing, and investor relations my whole entire career, 28 plus years, I said, they're not a dime a dozen. I said, they might be a dime a dozen, but we have a very unique one. And I was going over all of these particular highlights of our group, and you hit on something key. Aaron, everybody genuinely does care about one another. I rarely see people flashing the back of their baseball card in your face over and over again, talking about their luxury yachts, their luxury planes and their cars, and being in a braggadocious type of situation. Everybody's genuinely trying to help one another out. And, you know, there's very few egos. Now, are there some bad apples in the group? Sure, we've tried to identify them. Are all of us perfect in our deals? No, everybody has flaws and makes mistakes, but that's great. We're a football team. We're the Kansas City Chiefs that have some flaws, but we're going to win championships if we stick together year after year after year. So that's what I like about this group. And it also takes me back to something you said, Aaron, because I see that a lot of guys I grew up with, they have different philosophies in life. They have different mindsets. It's difficult to get into those circles and have these conversations and be around people who are like-minded individuals. The mastermind allowed me to make new friends, new confidants, new business partners who share so many more similarities as to where I am in my life now. And a lot of people that I grew up with who I considered very, very close friends, I can't believe how different we really are in life. So that's okay. I mean, be yourself, be true to yourself, play your game. Nothing wrong as long as you're a good person and treat your neighbor like the way you want to be treated. But this group brings so much more to me than just investing in real estate. And we always talk about that with the family, the faith, the travel, the food, the fitness, the health, and genuinely support. So I didn't want to go on too much of a tangent, but I think it's important because I always bring up the book in the background, Who Not How, and it's who you surround yourself with. And stop asking yourself the question of how do I get this done? How do I get this accomplished? How can I close my first deal? Just surround yourself with the right people and get in the right group. So I'm blessed now to be a bigger part of the MIH family, to meet people like yourself, Aaron. I worked with Jennifer for 6 years, 7 years, brought her into the family as well. She's now meeting a million other people, and it just becomes this beautiful kind of family that everyone's just looking out for one another. So, you know, for those of you who are listening, you know, get in the room, try to find that group, or come explore our family as well. And we'll see if you're a good fit to get into the family also. So
well said. Yeah. Yes.
Actually, you, Robert, you just brought up a good point because I am actually in several masterminds and they're all very different and I'm in them for very different reasons. And I think everybody has to find the one that fits for them.
Right.
But unlike every other mastermind that I have personally experienced, I think Marco and Hadar, and you just literally just said it. Not only do you need to figure out if it's right for you, what mastermind is right for you, but we have to figure out if you're right for us. And I don't know that there's anybody else out there. At least I haven't seen it. You know, a lot of these masterminds are how big can we make them? How much money can we make?
Yeah.
Marco and Hadar are absolutely the direct opposite of that. It's not about how big the mastermind is. It's about the value to the people in it and about making sure that everybody that's in it, even to Aaron's point, is somebody of value that's going to help and lift up the rest of the team. Because when you do get those bad apples or when you do get, you know, just a bunch of people, you lose that connection. And that connection is really, really powerful. It's how all of us are doing deals all over the country, right? It's how we're invested in JVs and, you know, as LPs and GPs and, you know, you name it, we're doing it, right? But we wouldn't be able to do that if we weren't able to surround ourselves with people that are like-minded, that have passion about what they're doing and about people that are just going to help lift us up and provide guidance in areas that we're not familiar with. So
right.
I think that's a really big piece to this particular, and it's definitely the thing that I have recognized very clearly is the major difference between it. And guess what? The one that I do the most with is this group. And I do that because it's just a family. And we all talk about trading our time for money, right? We're not doing it anymore. We all quit that, right? We quit to spend time with our family. Well, guess what? We can still spend time and it's just a different family, right? But it gives us the opportunity. So
yeah, love it.
It's really awesome.
Yeah, I agree.
So Aaron, let's talk a little bit about your, you know, you've been journeying into this multifamily investment space and, you know, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about like As you're analyzing, multifamily spaces, right? And you're trying to figure out what deals make sense. Do you have a couple of like top deal breakers that make you go completely the opposite direction when it comes to like underwriting multifamily and looking at multifamily deals?
Yeah, for sure. There's obviously areas, even in Kansas City, that I'll stay out of 100%. So those won't even be looked at. There's also median household income constraints that I've kind of taken a little bit more thorough look at here in the recent years. So if we're going to be getting a base rent or projecting a rent increase and the new norm is X amount, we need to make sure that the median household income reflects that for that area, for that zip code or for that area. And so it's very basic, but it's just something that I'm putting more stock into now. So it's just basic mathematics. Say if the average person makes this and we're trying to get this as our average rent, does it line up? Right. I'd say those are the two. And obviously population and job growth, those kind of metrics are in my area here are already, they're already headed in the right direction. And I kind of don't really need to know. Every place is growing. There's no place in Kansas City proper that in the MSA that's really not growing that I know of. So, there are some still war zones or areas I'd stay out of here. But, you know, when analyzing a deal, I keep it super, super simple. I'm just looking at the current income. I don't even care about their current expenses, guys. I mean, I'll look at it because I do care if they're paying utilities and I do care a couple of metrics, but they're not accurate. And if I'm a professional, I know how I can run my stuff and I have management in-house and I know all my metrics. So I'll plug my own expenses in, current income, my own expenses, right? Does it cover the debt today? And if it doesn't, is it a good enough deal that I'm willing to put a little bit more cash to get to 6 months where it does or a year where it does? I've done stuff that was such slam dunks later on. You kind of had to eat a year of just blah, right? But anyway, I'm looking at current income, current expenses. Does it cover the debt? And then the other thing is, does it have enough upside for me to refinance out, ideally in year two? I want to refi in year two. And I want to give all the money back. All my money and anybody else that went into the venture with me, can we get our money back in the form of a refinance? If it is and it's in a good area, then obviously that's very simple because people get, well, I just don't know how to do commercial multifamily. I just don't know how to look at the numbers. It's pretty simple. Like you, does it cover the debt today? And do you have an opportunity to pull your money out soon? But anyway, I hope that answered. I kind of went off on a little tangent there, but yes, that's hopefully answered some of your questions.
Awesome. Yeah. Robert, I'm going to ask you the same thing. I know you are really heavy into the underwriting of a lot of the deals or all of the deals that you're an OGP on. So what are some of your key strategies for underwriting and looking at deals or what are some of your deal breakers?
Well, you know, you're so intimate with me on a lot of these recent underwriting situations. And, you know, you probably realize me lately looking at a lot of the, issues that we've had over the last 3-4 years with inflation and supply chain issues, the cost of labor, the cost of materials, expenses, insurance premiums going up. And when I help others underwrite their deals, I constantly see, investors pushing the envelope on these deals, and you really need to stress these deals today. It also goes down to the type of an asset class. You know, is it a new build? You know, is it a vintage property? Are you going to anticipate deferred maintenance? So should you allocate some additional capex in your underwriting? I'm a stickler with that as well, and you know, okay, let's say you're going to hold the property for 8 years. Are you also allocating some dollars in year 4 or 5 for some new work that might be done on some of the properties that now need a whole new refurbish? And that goes back to my hotel career where we were always, looking at 5 to 10 year budgets going out. Yes, we're putting $300 million into a property today to refurbish 20 or 200 rooms, but where are we going to be in 5 years? Are you allocating that budget to change the carpets, the furniture, and the turnovers to keep that revenue up, that tenant satisfaction, or that guest satisfaction up too? I also see a lot of people leaving out a lot of information in underwriting, and you know, commissions and turnovers, you know, and things of that nature. So you can get yourself in a really bad situation very quickly if you don't have a grasp on your expenses. So I would, you know, my advice for people today is to really have a good grasp on your expenses. Of course, I can go on another tangent or two on really understanding your analytics in the local market. Be more, you know, be very, very prudent with your comps. Okay, don't try to push the envelope with that as well. Don't get too aggressive. You know, be smarter than your broker with comps as well, so that you really have, you know, a threshold on your income and expenses. But, you know, I love talking about this topic. I love reviewing underwriting and going back and forth, you know, on how we can stress these deals. But you can get yourself in trouble very, very quickly if you don't have this right. You know, and those are some of my quick tips, but you know, there are more, of course, many, many more things to do.
We could spend hours and hours and hours talking about things to do and not do from experience.
As I'm speaking, I'm like, all right, now let me talk about refinancing. Okay, let me talk about cap rate. Let me talk about this. But no, it's something you obviously have to you know, take your time understanding and learning. And again, it's another thing, even if you're an expert underwriter, or if you underwrite deals, I love speaking to all of my friends and family in the community about what they're seeing and what they're doing with their underwriting. You always pick up, you know, something of, you know, a success story of what's helped, or learn from a mistake you've made, which is really important. So,
couldn't agree more.
Awesome.
All right, awesome. Aaron, we're going to play a very quick but fun game.
Okay.
He's like, oh God. Okay. Okay. What are we doing? So we are going to do a lightning round of some rapid fire questions. Okay.
Oh boy.
And you got a second to think about it and a second to spit out the answer. Okay.
Okay.
So whatever comes to mind, you know, spit it out.
Get the editor ready.
Get the editor ready.
Yeah.
All right. So you ready?
Sure.
All right. I'm going to start, and then Robert's going to chime in as well. So if you can invest in only one real estate market over the next 10 years, which one would it be?
Go Chiefs. Sure. Kansas City.
That was an easy one. Go Eagles, though. Let me tell you who's going to take the Super Bowl this year.
I won't say anything.
We hope you're wrong, but I guarantee you, I will.
Listen, you've had two. You've had two. It's time to share.
You're right. We don't want to be greedy, but I strongly believe Kansas City's market is a better currently than Philly. But I don't know. Well, I don't know.
I don't have anything. I 100% agree. I would not be investing in Philadelphia, but I certainly am all Eagles.
So, Aaron, if you could travel to one destination, with your wife and kids next, where would you go?
We are going to Belize as a family. It's very exciting. My kids are like, hey, let's go do something. And because of business systems and real estate, we can go to Belize as a family, as a large family. So I'm very excited about that. We are definitely doing that this year. So
very cool.
Wow, congrats. Cool. That's awesome. So what's your dream property to own, no matter what the cost is? Dream property to own.
Dream property to own? Good question. You know, honestly, I'm going to set my dream. I just want A-class product, and I'm headed toward figuring this development thing out. And I have some ground already. I already own it. I've got the GC already talking to the city. We've already got preliminary and engineering stuff done and a concept plan. So I'm super excited about Class A stock that I can build. And according to my goal is to be able to build and refinance like I just described. But A class new construction. So we will see, but that currently I would have no other need besides A class new construction with no money in it. So that would be my dream property.
Nice.
Okay. So tell the audience, what's the last book you read and you could recommend?
Buy Back Your Time, Dan Martell. I read it every week. I literally almost go through that book every week.
Awesome.
On the Audible.
Yeah, you mentioned it a couple times. I actually literally wrote it down as a result of you saying it because I haven't read it yet.
You'll love it. You really will.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right, last question. How many kids do you really have?
7 kids.
Wow.
Do not ask me their names or their birthdays because I can't remember. No, on a serious note, though, people are like, how old are your kids? And I'm like, that's a natural question. Yeah. I'm like, as soon as I memorize it, it changes. So I'm just like, I have kids, guys. Just come on. Put me in a bad spot here.
Awesome. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for your hospitality today and your willingness to just jump in and do this podcast with us.
Well, good questions, guys. You guys did great. I appreciate it. You guys really, keep killing it. And I really do appreciate the offer. So hopefully we give the listener something here.
Awesome. And again, thank you to my fabulous co-host, Robert. I appreciate you as well.
Thank you, everybody. Feeling is mutual.
All right. Until next time. Well, that's a wrap for today. Thank you for listening to today's episode. And until next time, take care.
For more information about how Jennifer can help you plan, develop, and manage a strong real estate investment portfolio, visit growingempires.com.